Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. Its host and its founder is the great Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, she's talking to a very special guest, Stephen R. Sabat, Professor Emeritus of Psychology at Georgetown University. He's a three-time recipient of the Edward B. Bunn Award for Excellence in Teaching and a recipient of the College Dean's Award and College Academic Council Award for Excellence in Teaching at Georgetown. His research is focused on the remaining cognitive and social strengths and the subjective experience of people with Alzheimer's disease. He is the author of The Experience of Alzheimer's Disease, Life Through a Tangled Veil, published by Blackwell, and he's co-editor of Dementia, Mind, Meaning, and the Person, published by Oxford University Press. He has a new book now. It's titled Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia, What Everyone Needs to Know, first edition, published by Oxford University Press. Here now is Stephen R. Sabat, interviewed by the host of our program,
Professor
Carol
Sabat,
Marx.
We are delighted that you're our guest today on A Touch of Gray.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks very much for the time.
Now, you have spent 36 years researching biological and qualitative data dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's. What personal and medical experiences got you interested in documenting instead of the deficiencies patients with various forms of dementia that most clinicians concentrate on? You instead have focused on using your observations for clinical cases with the remaining and often substantial strengths that they have left. Very interesting.
Well, it always struck me as important that, everybody, a lot of professionals have spent lots of time, especially physicians, because that's what they do. Physicians look for what's wrong with people, and that's what they do because they want to make things better.
True.
And so there were so many people looking at folks with Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia and seeing what's wrong with them. I thought, well, there are enough people doing that. What about what people still can do? I think I notice this very often with families. You know, we always see what's wrong. But when we see what's wrong and concentrate on that, we often miss what's right. And especially with people who have Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia, it's what's right with them that we have to work with. And so we need to know what they can do so we can use it and feel better, actually. You know, they can still do that, and that still works, so that's really good. You know, even though there are things that are unfortunately not working right.
And so I think it's a good way to start out by asking you to define the two terms, dementia and Alzheimer's, because I think people get them confused. Are they two different conditions?
Well, yeah, yes and no. Okay, let me explain what dementia is first. So dementia is what we can call a syndrome, which means that it's a group of symptoms that people can show, and those symptoms can be caused by brain damage, and the brain damage can be caused by any number of diseases. So dementia is a problem with certain aspects of memory, certain aspects of language, certain aspects of visual, you know, looking at something and being able to tell me, oh, that's a fork or that's a pair of glasses, or being able to button your shirt or tie your shoelaces. So dementia involves some symptoms of memory problems, language problems, visual problems, and movement problems. But those problems can be caused by diseases. So Alzheimer's is one of the diseases that causes those problems.
Excellent explanation. Now, the format of your book I found also to be unique. It includes a question and answer format, as well as some parts of conversations that you've had with men and women in a clinical setting who've had Alzheimer's or dementia. Why do you think this format will be very helpful to the readers of your book? And What categories of readers do you think your book will be most helpful for?
Well, the question and answer format was something that is part of the series that Oxford University Press wanted. I mean, they have a whole series of books called What Everyone Needs to Know, and about different subjects, and they want the author to ask questions and answer them. Now, I think it's a good way of doing it because when I've gone around and even teaching undergraduates at Georgetown and then giving lectures to caregivers at different places across the country and different countries of the world, people always ask certain questions. And so I thought, well, it's a good idea. If people are asking these questions, I should ask those questions and then answer them because, you know, one question leads to another and it's sort of very systematic. So it's kind of like teaching. And so that kind of format kind of gets people to think about something and follow through. And maybe I'm actually asking the next question that they have in their minds as they get to it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Because one thing follows another.
Exactly. And having spent 40 years teaching in the classroom of university, I know something about how to anticipate what people may ask or how people may think. Now, the other thing about the book is that I wrote it mainly because I wanted care partners, meaning that could be families, friends, it could even be professionals, to learn about strengths. And there are some things that professionals will know that are in the biological side of things. They will know that stuff. But the rest of the book, and talking about, the way a person might want to preserve his or her self-respect, even though the person can't tell you what day of the week it is or subtract 7 from 100 or look at a picture and say, that's my daughter, Christine, but can still feel like this situation is going to humiliate me. I don't want to be part of it. So I wanted people in all walks of life to learn about those strengths because they're not commonly taught.
And it's important to learn about them, even if you don't have a member or relative that has Alzheimer's or dementia. And as for us, all of us can develop one of those diseases
yes.
in our lifetime, so it's good to be informed.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, that leads to a very important point that you bring up, and that is, Alzheimer's disease is among the most feared conditions among people, and certainly in this country. And so what we have is a situation where all of that negative stuff is out there in the air. And so people are thinking, I don't want to get that, because they think, well, if I get that, then I'm going to be a vegetable or some such. But it's, so your point is really important, that we all really ought to know, we'll be more educated about what Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia really mean.
When you refer to relatives or medical professionals who work with someone who has Alzheimer's or dementia, you call that person a care partner instead of a caregiver, which is the common term that we hear. And why is it important to use what I call a new and very helpful term, care partner?
Well, I actually learned that term from a very dear and deeply respected colleague and friend, Lisa Snyder, who sadly just passed away the other day. And she ran support groups for people with Alzheimer's at the University of California at San Diego's Alzheimer's Research Center for 27 years. And we worked together on a number of occasions, and she introduced me to that term, care partner, because in a sense, one is giving care to someone else, but that other person is part of a relationship, and that person has something to give to the relationship too. And so it's kind of like dancing, ballroom dancing, that one person isn't doing all the work. There are two people involved in this. And so we're partners in life and we're partners in care, and we have to work with one another rather than I'm doing things to you or for you. So the person with a diagnosis is not just receiving and not giving, only receiving and not giving. And that's an important thing because lots of people who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's have spent their lives giving of themselves in one way or another to others. And now all of a sudden they're on the receiving end of everything, and very often they feel have nothing to give. One man at Johns Hopkins in a clinic when I was testing people there, before I began testing him, he said, "Doc, you got to find a way to give us purpose again." And I mean, that's a profoundly important thing to say.
Well, as ever.
And so Care Partner is, you know, we are in this together. We're working together. I'm not doing to you, but we're doing something together.
Now, there are various tests that are used to find out if a patient probably has some form of dementia. What are they, and is it fair to say that on the standard tests, that they can result in people not being able to answer a question correctly or perform a task because it's taken out of total context?
That's absolutely true. So there are lots of different neuropsychological tests that are given in hospital clinics and by neuropsychologists in private practice. And there's a whole host of them. There are some that are very commonly given and used in drug efficacy studies. The mini mental state exam is one, and it's there are 30 points on the exam. About 10 of them are questions that are asking you things like, what day of the week is it? What is today's date? What month is it? What season is it? What city are we in? What county are we in? What floor are we on? What building are we in? Things like that. And, you know, that's all really playing into a person's ability to recall information. And recall is really tough. So I'll give you an example. I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here, so bear with me.
And I think it's important.
I'm glad you said that because it really is. So, I mean, I would ask a person, what day of the week is this? And this happened very frequently. The person said, I don't know. And okay, you know, got a zero for that. And then I would say, well, is it Saturday? No. Is it Monday? No. Is it Thursday? Yes. And it was. So that person was able to identify through recognition, so like a multiple choice test, what day it was, but couldn't recall it out of nowhere. And that happens a lot. And so what you said about context is really important. Now, here you are in a hospital clinic. I don't know about you or people in your audience, but I have a condition. I don't mind telling everybody about this. It's called white coat syndrome. And that means that, I mean, I don't particularly like hospitals, but I go there for an annual checkup. And I'll be sitting, and I'm just getting nervous in one way or another. And, they have a big screen TV on with the news, which jacks up my blood pressure because it's absurd stuff on
it. It certainly does today.
And then I'm starting to be asked, now, being tested is another anxiety-provoking situation. So, you know, so one a type of test for movement problems involves asking people to do certain things like wave goodbye or blow a kiss. And I remember once there was a woman at the day center where I did a lot of work and spent 30 years, you know, just going a couple of days a week. And I would say I would try to give her some of these things. She was a really terrific person, but I would say I'd blow a kiss, she couldn't do it. And wave goodbye, she couldn't do it. And then, you know, a little while later, I was talking to her about that, and I said, well, how, you know, what about blowing a kiss? And she had been raised in a vaudeville family, and so she started singing this Al Jolson song, "Toot Toot Tootsie Goodbye," and then waved.
Uh-huh.
And then started singing that song, "Give Me a Little Kiss, Will You," and then blew a kiss. So she needed a context in which to do those things. And because that's what we do. We live in a social context. We don't just do things that. Should she be able to blow a kiss out of nowhere? Sure. Should she be able to wave goodbye without it? Yes. But the fact that she couldn't do it out of nowhere doesn't mean she can't do it at all when the situation calls for it.
And I think asking multiple questions to get the answer, as you point in the book, is a way that most people would never think of but can be very effective. So that's great. Now, when it comes to memory, you talk about, you know, in your book, there are two kinds of memory, explicit and implicit. And what is the difference? And how, after you've told us what the difference is, How can medical personnel or relatives, after they know about the implicit memory, which you're going to tell us, how can that be helpful in dealing with somebody who is mentally challenged?
Well, that's a really great question, and it's something that I want to spread as far and wide as possible. So explicit memory, and we just kind of touched on those things without calling it explicit. So when I ask you a question like, what day of the week is this, I'm asking you a question for which there is one and only one correct answer. And that is, and you have to do that by recall. So recall is one type of explicit memory. Another type is recognition. Is it Monday? Is it Tuesday? Is it Wednesday? But there's still only one correct answer, but I'm asking you to recognize it when you hear it. So in those two situations, that's called explicit memory, because there's only one correct answer, and I'm asking you something quite directly about a particular piece of information. Implicit memory is something else. So the textbook definition of implicit memory is a change in the way a person acts that comes about because of an experience the person had, even though the person doesn't recall having had the experience. So I'll just say that again, and I'll give you an example. It's a change in the way a person acts based on what they've experienced, even though they can't recall the details of what they experienced. So in the book, I give an example. There was a man who he had Alzheimer's in the moderate stage of the disease, and he always did the landscaping around the house. And he cut the grass with the lawnmower and trimmed the shrubs. And at a certain point, for no particular reason other than her worry, his wife decided she didn't want him to use the lawnmower again. And so she put a lock on the shed in the back of the house where all of the gardening equipment was kept. And one day the grass needed cutting. He went out there and he saw the lock, and he took a cinder block and broke the lock off and took out the lawnmower and cut the grass, and without any problem. But now his wife was worried even more, and so she called. They had three adult children in the area. She called the oldest, John, to come over and take the lawnmower away so that Dad won't hurt himself. So the husband was never told about this. But meanwhile, the elder son came and took the lawnmower. And when the grass needed cutting again, he went out to the shed. The lawnmower was gone. He reported to his wife it was stolen, at which point she said, no, it wasn't. I gave it to John because I didn't want you to hurt yourself. 5 days later, the three adult children come for dinner, and the youngest arrives, and Dad gives hugs and kisses. The middle child arrives, hugs and kisses. John arrives, and Dad won't look at him or talk to him. This never happened before. The wife says, are you angry with John? He says, yeah. And she says, why? And he says, I don't know. He made a memory of having been disenfranchised and disrespected. You did this behind my back. You took my lawnmower. You didn't even have the courtesy of telling me. But he cannot recall that, but he made a memory of how it felt and how he felt. And it was related to John. So he made a memory of something. He cannot tell you the explicit details, but his actions toward John changed as a result, and it was 5 days later, so it's a long-term memory. Now, what the second part of your question, which is so important, is what does this mean for families? Well, lots of times people will do things or say things in front of someone who has been diagnosed and say, well, they won't remember it anyway. Well, it depends on what you mean by remember.
Right.
If you mean the person won't be able to recall the details of what just happened, that's true. But if you think that the person won't make a memory of how you just humiliated him, you're wrong. And so here becomes a real problem, because if you think the person can't make a memory of anything, and then the person starts acting like the husband did toward John, now, if you don't realize that he made a memory, he's righteously indignant about what happened. If you think that that's not true, then you think he's irrationally hostile. And then you go and you tell the physician, well, he's irrationally hostile. Now we have a medical problem, when in fact it was a social problem. Does that make some sense?
Yes, and so it's important to try to ask multiple choice things really about their behavior, why they behaved in that way.
Yeah, you could say, well, you're angry because of this, you're angry because of that. But the fact is, you are angry for a reason. And I think that's an important thing, that we have to remember that people with Alzheimer's disease can be affected by how they're treated, and they can make new memories, even if they can't recall them. And so I guess the point is, it comes back to the golden rule in a way. You know, you do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You treat people with kindness and love, because they will make a memory. People make memories of people who treated them kindly and people who didn't. And besides, they're people, aren't they? And don't they deserve to be treated in ways that are not humiliating?
Absolutely.
Extremely important information from Stephen R. Sabat, Professor Emeritus of Psychology at Georgetown University. He's a 3-time recipient of the Edward B. Bunn Award for Excellence in Teaching and a recipient of the College Dean's Award and College Academic Council Award for Excellence in Teaching at Georgetown University. He's written a number of books on the subject. His latest book is titled Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia, What Everyone Needs to Know, the first edition just published by Oxford University Press. The interview is being conducted by Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. The interview between Carol Marks and Stephen R. Sabat will continue right here on A Touch of Gray in just a moment. Hi, this is Michael Harrison. I hope you're enjoying this installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, and finding it to be a meaningful listening experience. This wonderful little weekend program has been on the radio across America in one form or another for more than 20 years. Its mission is to provide mature Americans with information and content about aging to help them cope with the nonstop challenges of life during these hectic modern times. We're talking about health, finances, relationships, and plain old fun. Whether it's learning about the latest technology and social norms, or fondly remembering yesterday's arts and entertainment, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is dedicated to serving that gigantic segment of the population so sadly ignored by most of today's popular media. Founded and hosted by a truly great lady, Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the ongoing battle against ageism, this program is geared to what has commonly been referred to as the sandwich generation. Baby boomers who are coping with such challenges as still supporting their adult children while caring for their elderly parents. It's my honor and privilege to be associated with Carol Marks and be a part of her mission to support, defend, and inspire today's generation of what she lovingly calls seasoned citizens. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, online at www.atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. And right here on this great radio station every weekend. Thank you so much for listening.
This is Brad Shepard. Whenever you think of Social Security, do you think of survivors' benefits too? You see, Social Security is more than retirement. Social Security makes regular monthly payments to the families of workers who die too. More than 7 million people get survivors' benefits from Social Security, including almost 2 million children. Benefits that pay for food and clothing, medical care, and school benefits you can count on when you're planning your financial future. For more information, go to the SSA website at www.ssa.gov.
Michael Harrison here. Those of you who follow talk radio and are interested in what goes on behind the scenes might also know me as the publisher of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication that serves the talk media industry. We cover the talk show business as it exists on radio, television, and the Internet. I often have the opportunity to speak about these media as a guest on radio and TV talk shows or comment on industry developments in newspapers and magazines. For the past 2 years, I've also hosted a weekly podcast that delves into the media in general and focuses on the rapid changes, not only in radio, but all of communications technology. Changes that I believe are contributing to rewiring the human nervous system. Computers, social media, and all the different platforms of instantaneous communications that define the new digital age are combining to actually accelerate our evolution as a species. Sound pretty far out? Well, it is. As a matter of fact, the name of this podcast series is Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison. Each week, I interview an outstanding personality from the world of radio or any number of its related fields in the arts, sciences, entertainment, politics, or academia. It's available to download, and you can subscribe to it at absolutely no charge whatsoever at iTunes or at the website www.upcloseandfarout.com. Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison. Just a click away on your computer or mobile device. Visit iTunes or www.upcloseandfarout.com. Make Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison a weekly podcast listening experience. Thank you. This week on the Michael Harrison Interview, a conversation with David Smalley about the age-old argument between science and religion.
Don't do what I did and run out.
If it's working, don't quit. Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished?
You've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite is nutrition.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite.
No.
When I get to about 3/4.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite for your dog this week.
We'll send you 4 extra packs of Nubba-Nubs, free.
Nubba-Nub treats are freeze-dried beefy treats.
Made with no cereal fillers, chemical preservatives, or dyes.
Good for the tummy.
And yummy.
Nubba-Nub treats.
Free this week at Dynavite.com.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Let's get back to the conversation between the host of our show, Carol Marks, and Stephen R. Sabat, professor emeritus of psychology at Georgetown University and author of Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia, What Everyone Needs to Know, first edition, published by Oxford University Press.
In your book, you write about your experiences with different patients, and one that I found most interesting was Dr. B. He was a retired professor, and mm-hmm. He was in the moderate to severe stages of Alzheimer's, but he was still able to verbalize in a very appropriate way his anger and frustrations at having to deal with this disease. And is that why you say that all of us who deal with dementia and Alzheimer's disease, and we will sooner or later, should stop using the phrase memory loss?
Yes. Yes. Because people, see, what does memory loss mean? And if I ask people what you think that means, it usually comes down to, well, they don't remember what I told them 5 minutes ago. They don't remember that they asked me that question and I answered it. What they really mean is the person doesn't recall having asked a question and having had it answered. But interestingly enough, I'll give you an example. Yeah, doctor, let me just give you another example of that business of memory loss, because I was talking to a woman on the phone. She had Alzheimer's. She was in a support group that I was co-leading, and we wanted to meet at the church where the support group met, and I said, well, how about if we meet there at 10 tomorrow? And she said, fine, and we kept on talking about something, and then she said, So don't you think we ought to decide on what time we should meet? And I said, yes, how about 10 o'clock tomorrow at the church? And she said, that's fine, and we talk about something else for a while. And she says, well, don't you think we should decide what time we should meet? And this happened 6 times. Every time she asked the same question, I answered it as if it were the first time. The 6th time she asked the question, so what time are we going to meet? I said, take a guess. She said 10. I said, that's right.
See?
Take a guess.
Using different words in different language.
Yes. If I said, what time did I tell you? Now she's anxiety. Well, oh, my God. Or she'll say, well, why would I ask you what time if you had told me already? She can't recall what I said. But when I said take a guess, there's no pressure.
Right.
And I'm just talking, you can be wrong when you take a guess, right?
Right. But if you keep after it, you may get it. And that's
what
counts. And getting back to Dr. B with Alzheimer's, I was so pleased to learn that he was able to experience happiness and have a sense of proper power and respect. So what we were talking about, the appropriateness of using certain words, when talking to someone with dementia, what are some good words to use, and why should you avoid using the word suffer or suffering, you know, because most people say, oh, I know you're suffering.
Well, but that's not all they are.
Yeah, that's true.
And in fact, you know, saying somebody, there's a difference between saying someone has been diagnosed with dementia and saying that someone is a dementia patient or demented. A person is a patient only in relation to medical professionals. But I'm a dental patient, but that's not who I am to you, for example. You didn't introduce me as, oh, this is Professor Sabat, he's a dental patient. Well, I am to my dentist, but otherwise I'm not. And a person with Alzheimer's disease is an Alzheimer's patient in relation to their physician, but is also a retired professor or a husband or a parent. And there are lots of different social identities. And so when we say a person is an Alzheimer's sufferer, well, they may be angry, as Dr. B was. He was really upset about the things he couldn't do, which means he was able to evaluate himself and give meaning and value to what was going on in his life. But he was also a very distinguished man. And I remember saying to him, well, you know, this is an assault on your dignity. And he goes, well, I got a lot of dignity. And he did. And he acted that way. And it was really quite incredible. I mean, just because you have a diagnosis of dementia doesn't mean that you can't feel proper pride about things that you should be properly prideful about. So when we see people only in terms of what they can't do or the fact that they're unhappy about certain, if that's all they are, then we miss the bigger picture of who they are and how we can make moments that are genuinely worthwhile with them. I hope I'm answering your question. If I'm not,
absolutely.
I know you're gonna tell me.
And finally, do you have a blog or website where our listeners can learn more about you, your other books, as well as your latest one?
You know, I don't, but I need one. I need one. I have to come into the 21st century and create a website so people can go to it. But I can tell you that you can go. There's a website that the Alzheimer's Disease Association has, and it's called Alzheimer's Public Health News. And if you go to it's the Alzheimer's Association in the United States. And there's a part of it that's called Alzheimer's Public Health News. And if you scroll down and keep on scrolling down, you'll see that there comes a point where you'll see there's a section called Educational Videos. And when you look at that and click on it, you'll see that there are three parts to it. And it's three different segments that I did for the Alzheimer's Association on these types of topics. So if you go to the Alzheimer's Association, Public Health News, and it's in the February 2018 section, and go to the area that is called educational videos communicating with people with dementia. There are three videos of mine there, and I think they can be really helpful to people. But I will create a website, and I'll try to make that known to people.
All right, and you'll have to come back when you write your next book, because it is so helpful for people to be able to learn how to speak with their loved ones in a way that is beneficial both to the loved one and certainly to them. So, Professor Stephen Sabat, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about your excellent book, Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia, What Everyone Needs to Know. And it certainly says everything that you need to know. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time very much. And it was a pleasure speaking with you.
That's Stephen R. Sabat, Professor Emeritus of Psychology at Georgetown University. His latest book is titled Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia, What Everyone Needs to Know, first edition, published by Oxford University Press. The interview was conducted by the host and founder of the program, Carol Marks. Coming up next, a tribute to Vic Damone, when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
Ooh, get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
Petey stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bill.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft. It's silky. It's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smell.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. An analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com.
If you suffer from back pain, joint pain, arthritis, or other chronic pain, you need to try the water therapy benefits that Advantage Therapeutic Walk-In Bath provides. Not only does Advantage Walk-In Bath help get you in and out of the tub safely, it is proven to be beneficial to relieve aches and pains, giving you the relief to enjoy your day. You can enjoy taking your new bath and rejuvenating your body in as little as 7 days. And if you call today and ask for the radio special, we'll give you a $1,500 coupon towards the purchase of a new Vantage walk-in bath. Every call in the next 10 minutes will receive a $1,500 coupon towards the purchase of a new Vantage walk-in bath. Your aches and pains can be washed away. Call right now for a risk-free quote. 800-559-2269. 800-559-2269. 800-559-2269. That's 800-559-2269.
To know somehow you are near. I have often walked on the street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live. Are there lilac trees in the heart of town? Can you hear a lark in any other part of town? Does enchantment pour out of every door? No, it's just on the street where you live. Oh, the towering feeling just to know somehow you are near.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Joining us from Western Massachusetts is the morning show host and general manager of Pioneer Valley Radio and an expert on popular music of the 20th and 21st centuries. His name is Brad Shepherd. Brad, we lost Vic Damone this week, and Vic Damone was one of the greats, wasn't he?
Absolutely. You know, he's in that pantheon of great male vocalists of that era, where you would put Al Martino and Jerry Vale and Jack Jones, as you mentioned off the air a moment or two ago, and who was the other one? Steve Lawrence, obviously, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Tony Bennett who's still kicking is in that category, and of course, the great influencers were Frank Sinatra and before him Bing Crosby. The crooners, there are people crooning today who continue in that vein. You have Michael Bublé, and you have Steve Tyrell, but those guys had a style that they, you know what it is? They made it seem effortless. Isn't it amazing how they sounded like every guy singing in the shower, but a heck of a lot better.
The crooners even go back further than Crosby. They go back as far as a guy named Russ Colombo, who was one of the first big guys after Jolson. Jolson had that brah, you know, like a trombone, and then it got more subtle with the guys like Crosby, and he kicked off that whole crooner era, really, and he was an influence on Sinatra.
A lot of it was because of the invention of the microphone and making records. As a matter of fact, Jolson didn't think that Bing Crosby was a real singer, because he sounded to his ear back in those days like he was hugging the microphone and talking and singing like that. When Jolson would say, "I don't need a microphone, Swanee, how I love ya."
He would say, "I was in show business before they had electricity." That was one of the things he was very fond of saying.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny how art, what is considered art, changes due to what people are used to and the technology that delivers the art?
Absolutely. You know, one interesting thing, Michael, about Vic Damone is that he was originally offered the role of Johnny Fontaine in The Godfather, the Frank Sinatra-esque character, and he turned it down. He didn't want to antagonize the mob. They weren't offering him enough money. It didn't have enough screen time. And then it went to Al Martino.
Al Martino played that. Right. Interesting. Johnny Fontaine, who was a Frank Sinatra-esque character, and all kinds of allusions to the mob. Very, very interesting. Damone lived in the Palm Beach area, where he still performed a lot. And from what I understand, I believe he was in his 80s. I'm not quite sure how old he was.
Well, Michael, he was flirting with 90. He was 89 when he died very recently.
Wow. One of the greats, and another piece of the Great American Songbook, now part of eternity. I want to thank you very much for joining us, Brad Shepherd from Pioneer Valley Radio in Western Massachusetts, pioneervalleyradio.com, if folks want to hear one of the best broadcasters in New England and the country, Brad Shepherd. I'm Michael Harrison. Coming up next, Meg McDonald and another installment of Meg when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment. We'll be right back.
ew, get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
Petey stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bills.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E .com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is now soft, it's silky, it's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life, she's got energy.
Tons of energy, no more bad smells.
Dynavite's the bomb. Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E .com.
Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, an analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com.
If you suffer from back pain, joint pain, arthritis, or other chronic pain, you need to try the water therapy benefits that Advantage Therapeutic Walk-In Bath provides. Not only does Advantage Walk-In Bath help get you in and out of the tub safely, it is proven to be beneficial to relieve aches and pains, giving you the relief to enjoy your day. You can enjoy taking your new bath and rejuvenating your body in as little as 7 days. And if you call today and ask for the radio special, we'll give you a $1,500 coupon towards the purchase of a new Vantage walk-in bath. Every call in the next 10 minutes will receive a $1,500 coupon towards the purchase of a new Vantage walk-in bath. Your aches and pains can be washed away. Call right now for a risk-free quote. 800-559-2269. 800-559-2269. 800-559-2269. That's 800-559-2269.
Let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. When you read, you begin with
ABC.
When you sing, you begin with Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi. The first three notes just happen to be Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti.
Well, that's a nice way to get into the final segment of this hour of our broadcast. A little Julie Andrews on A Touch of Grey singing about singing. Now we're going to have a very charming lady. Her name is Meg McDonald. The feature is called Meg, Full of Megisms, and she is going to talk about singing.
I am by no means what you would call a professional-grade singer, but I do enjoy singing and can carry a tune for the most part. I'm an alto, and when I was in junior high and high school in the 60s, all the popular girls sang soprano. In the school choir, we altos stood in the back row and were considered the support singers for those who could hit the high notes. And then along came Cher, and we altos weren't in the background anymore. When I hear music, I involuntarily start swaying to the beat. I like to listen to songs on the radio when I'm driving and roll down the window and tap my hand on the top of the car to the beat of the music. One of my absolute favorite tunes is a novelty song that was on the Billboard Top 40 chart for 12 weeks, sold over 1 million copies, and went gold. I still remember the words, and I'll never forget I was in the 5th grade when the Playmates sang a song about a Cadillac and a little Nash Rambler. Beep, 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 beep. His horn went beep, beep, beep. I still love it. There are songs that stay in your memory, and then there are songs that stay in your head. We've all had this happen. A song gets stuck in your head, and you can't get it out. I have a clear memory of one particular song. It was the number one single in 1969. I liked the song, but you couldn't turn on the radio and not hear it, so it became embedded in your brain. I'm trying to go to sleep at night, and in my head I'm hearing... Sugar. Oh, honey, honey. This phenomenon has a name. When a song gets stuck in your head, it's called an earworm. I know. Doesn't that say it? Ugh. Well, there's good news for all of us. Researchers at the University of Reading in the UK made a breakthrough on getting rid of earworms, and it works 33% of the time. You're going to love it. Chew gum. Yep, that's it. Turns out that the repetitive jaw motion of chewing gum somehow breaks the cycle of that song going around and around in your head. Ah, silence.
Well, thank you, Meg. We can't have too much silence. That doesn't work very well on radio. And Meg, wonderful performance as always. For those of you who can't get enough of Meg and you want to binge listen to Meg, you can hear Meg's Meg, a whole bunch of Meg-isms, for quite a long stretch by going to www.talkerslive.com, where you'll hear plenty of Meg McDonald and Meg. I want to thank Dwayne Doobie Jr., our producer on the front line, for pulling all these pieces together, our great host and founder, Carol Marks, our affiliates all across America. And on behalf of the team here, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, inviting you to join us on this great talk radio station next weekend again for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
My joints used to kill me. I'd wake up with stiff knees and a stiff back, and it wouldn't get much better throughout the day. I went to doctors and took almost every supplement you can think of, and nothing seemed to help. Then I found something called Oil Can Joint Lubricant. They use only top-of-the-line, all-natural ingredients, and I know many companies make similar claims, but here's the big difference. Oil Can ingredients are scientifically formulated to work together faster than anything else in the marketplace. That's guaranteed. I take Oil Can every day. My knee pain was gone in just a few days. So if you have knee pain, back pain, and you've tried everything, try Oil Can Joint Lubricant risk-free right now. I'm confident you'll have fewer aches and pains within days, or we will gladly refund your money. Call right now. 800-430-9466. 800-430-9466. 800-430-9466. 800-430-9466.